This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed colleague, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, I must have missed a memo. No one told me that it was sash day here on The Orb. Is that a Klingon sash that you're wearing right there?
Actually, it is. I just had my baldric cleaned and, just got it back from the dry cleaners. It takes them a while to really get inside each one of those links and get it sparkling again. And so I finally got that back. I've been wearing it around today. It's really the perfect weather. Apparently, Worf and his extremist group have stopped playing with the weather. Apparently, he found Janzia in a bathing suit too much to handle. And, the weather is more normal. I'm actually wearing shorts again. So I'm wearing my baldric and my shorts. People have been staring at me. I don't know why.
I'm just picturing that with the shorts. It reminds me of the old Saturday Night Live sketch when Patrick Stewart was hosting SNL and they did Love Boat, The Next Generation.
Oh, yes.
For those listening who remember that, they had the white Bermuda shorts and the tall socks and the white shoes, but they had the colorful tunic, Starfleet tunics, and of course Worf was there being played by Phil Hartman.
Right.
It was hilarious.
The perfect Klingon, Phil Hartman.
Absolutely. All right, well today we are going to talk about Worf as we make our way through the remaining characters who we have not discussed in depth up to this point. And as soon as we get through all the characters, we'll be getting into more topics like we have on a couple of shows in the past. So, Matthew, Worf is a big challenge. We're going to touch on some aspects of his life. You know, this is, I don't know for sure, but Worf is one of those characters like Frasier Crane, who is the longest running character on television, played by the same actor. At any rate, there are only a handful of characters like this. I guess you could say O'Brien is as well on Deep Space Nine, but of course he wasn't at the forefront in The Next Generation the way that Worf was. So in terms of actual screen time, number of episodes, really no one can rival Michael Dorn and Worf on Star Trek.
That's true. And like Frasier Crane, he also enjoys tossed salad and scrambled eggs, and so
he does.
Yes,
and I like his little pet Targ Eddie, who we never see on screen. But
no, but they always talk about.
He's always sitting in the captain's chair, and he would get out.
Always chasing Spot around.
Fun times on the Enterprise.
Exactly. I think you're right, though. It's. Reading through, if you just went to Memory Alpha and you look at Worf's page, it's really one of the most extensive pages of any character. And that's really because Worf has been around in probably the most Star Trek episodes of any character. Because of that, though, I think it lends to a really great character and one that people really gravitate towards. I'm a big Worf fan, especially as he gets on to Deep Space Nine.
He is a very interesting character, and of course he suffered as a lot of characters did on The Next Generation in terms of opportunity for development because, you know, each character, unless you were Picard or Data, you know, each character didn't get that many episodes to themselves. And so we learned a bit about Worf. We learned a lot about his background, and we got to see him kind of struggle with being a Klingon and his duty to Starfleet on The Next Generation. Of course, he played a very important role in the evolution of the Klingons, which, although we think of Klingons as being all of Star Trek and the original series, you know, the Klingons didn't appear very often in the original series. It really is the Next Generation that created this entire Klingon culture, and Worf was such a big part of that. But why don't we start with what will obviously take us to the Next Generation and talk about Worf's childhood a little bit, because his childhood is definitely the key to what set up the entire character arc for Worf from the first time we met him all the way to the end of Deep Space Nine, and how he struggled for identity pretty much from start to finish.
Well, for Worf, as I was thinking about him today, I think that he suffers from like this Superman syndrome. You know, he grows up in a world where everybody is weaker than he is, and he has all these different emotions that humans don't have, and he has drives that humans don't have, and all of these things come together to make somebody who spends most of his childhood really having to learn to control that and put a lid on it and really deny so much of who he is. And I mean, honestly, that's a really damaging psychological thing to have to do from such a young age. And of course, you know, there's the soccer game where he accidentally kills a kid because that they go and he headbutts the other student, and that breaks the child's neck.
Not exactly headbutting even.
Well, no.
Because that's kind of an intentional thing. This was a collision.
Right,
you know,
takes
place in sports. And just because of his physical strength and the ridges hitting the skull of a human, this happened when Worf was 13 years old. So it's a very traumatic experience. And this player from the other team died a day later. And like you said, that's a good point. I knew that you had referred to it as Superman syndrome, and I was kind of wondering where that was going. But yeah, when you talk about the strength, it is a case where dealing with the fact that he's different from everyone else, that's already a heavy weight on a child who, you know, finds themselves living in an unfamiliar culture. But children adapt very easily. And so usually that's something that they can overcome, and they become just a part of that culture as if it's their native environment. But in this case, yeah, like you say, the strength, the urges makes him very different. And then he does have to learn to control that. And then that creates a situation where he, through his whole life, he has become accustomed, I guess, to kind of keeping a lid on himself.
And then when that lid gets taken off, it kind of frightens everybody around him when he finally lets out who he is. And I think that that's, again, that's just something that we all kind of go through a lot of times, a lot of people in life. And I know myself, you'll be afraid to kind of show who you really are. And by the time that you want to try and figure out who you are, you don't even know where to start because you spent so long pretending to be somebody else. And Worf, I think for a lot of his life, pretends to be somebody else. He really pretends to be the good human and the good son of his parents, the good Starfleet officer. He wants to also be a good Klingon, and yet none of these things I don't know if he actually understands very well because he's had to spend so much time pretending. He doesn't really know who he is. And I think that's a really interesting thing to watch this character kind of develop over the years. And then, of course, you've seen him on TNG, and then he moves over to Deep Space Nine. And the two mediums and the two shows really show different sides of him. And I think we'd all agree that DS9 gives Worf a chance to kind of breathe as a character and really grow into who we all think of as Worf. Not just the guy who gets told no all the time.
Right. Although that still happens, but yes.
Not quite as much, though, on Deep Space Nine, actually.
Not as much, that's true. But the nature of the Deep Space Nine environment, the nature of the space station, does give him more room to breathe, as you say. Because when he's on the Enterprise, he has to fit into that all Starfleet command structure. He knows that Picard's at the top and everyone has to fall in line on that ship. And that's just how a Starfleet vessel works. You know, everyone's on that ship for a mutual purpose. They're all there to serve the mission of Starfleet. And then when he gets on Deep Space Nine, where there are Starfleet officers, yes, but they are a minority and there are all these other races, many races who are completely unfamiliar, who, you know, come in from the Gamma Quadrant that we don't really see that much, but you know they're there because it's kind of a center of, it's a hub of activity for trading and trade routes and all. And there's a lot of chaos surrounding him. And Sisko is a much more relaxed captain in general than Picard is in terms of, you know, being open to the crew, exploring who they are and, you know, having their own lives. And so it was a perfect environment for Worf. I remember being a little bit unhappy about Worf coming over to Deep Space Nine. And I remember when this happened before the Way of the Warrior premiered. And we used to have discussions on Star Trek Continuum, which was on the Microsoft network. Were you ever on Star Trek Continuum back in the day, Matthew?
You know, I wasn't. That was a little before I think I got into anything online. You know, online at that point was still very early, and I wasn't really into that just yet.
So, but we had a lot of debates on there, and people were really up in arms about Worf coming on to Deep Space Nine. And I also thought, you know, I think I felt like it was a gimmick at the time. I think I felt like the studio was looking for a way to give a little bit of boost to DS9 because the first season of Deep Space Nine is rather lackluster. As we've discussed, it only really starts becoming really good and unique when we get to Duet and In the Hands of the Prophets at the end of season one. And then season two was good, but still finding its identity. And it seemed like maybe it was kind of a gimmick. But now, afterwards, after it all played out, it's very easy to see that Deep Space Nine was the perfect environment for Worf's character to open up and for us to really find out who he is. And like you say, go on a journey with him that we can see a lot of ourselves in.
Well, I think it's interesting too, you know, for Worf, when he gets to Deep Space Nine, he's not comfortable there because he's lived in a very rigid society for so long, you know, first with his parents and having to be so careful with what he does. Again, this kind of Superman syndrome. And then, of course, Starfleet helps really rein that in for him and continue on that path. And then on Deep Space Nine, you get to a place where everything's a lot more open. You know, it's much more like Vegas in that way. You know, what happens on DS9 right. Stays on DS9. And people are a lot more free with themselves, even the Starfleet officers. And, you know, Worf kind of butts up against that in the first few episodes. He really doesn't enjoy living on the station. But as you watch his character progress, I think one of the things that the show does is really give Worf a chance to actually breathe as a character. And you watch Deep Space Nine allow Worf to be able to find himself and who he wants to be, not just who he's been made to be by all these, you know, restrictions or even fears that he's had growing up or any of those things. I think he really just gets to find himself and who he is. And, you know, he gets to do that too through great friendships, his friendship and respect for Sisko, his friendship and respect for Martok, for Jadzia. All these people really help him find a part of himself, I think, that he has been missing for a long time or just suppressing.
Right. And also with O'Brien.
Exactly. Yes.
Early on,
yes.
It's O'Brien who helps him acclimate to the environment of Deep Space Nine, which we can talk about a little bit. Before we get too far into Deep Space Nine, though, going back to his childhood, the thing about Worf is that, so he was born on Kronos, but he moved to Kittimer when he was 5 years old. And then there was the Romulan attack, which became known as the Kittimer Massacre. And he was found by his human, who became his human father, Sergei Rodzenko, when the USS Intrepid came there. And he was adopted by humans. And then, of course, he didn't go to Earth initially. He went to a farming colony called Galt, but he lived with humans. And then he went to Earth. And then he grew up there. And then, when he was 15 years old, he went back to Kronos to visit the House of Moog and see his cousins there, which reminds me of how my kids like to go out to their cousin's place from time to time. And it's a Worf taking a trip out to play with his cousins. But at that point, he's 15 years old. He goes to Kronos and he declares his intent to become a warrior. He goes through the rite of ascension. And up until that point, though, he's grown up with humans and he may be Klingon. He may be fully Klingon by blood, but he's really a human who wants to discover his origins. I think we talked about, when we talked about Odo, we talked about being torn between two worlds, and Odo is torn between his life with the solids and then his origin with the founders, and, you know, trying to find his place amongst the solids and then later trying to kind of balance his identity with the two. Worf is, I think, even more to that extent in that being Klingon and being human, it's easier for us to identify with that because we're dealing with, it's basically like we're dealing with the difference between, you know, being American and German or Chinese or French or Japanese or, you know, different Earth cultures in that case, because we have two where humanoid cultures are very similar overall, unlike Odo, which was just really an alien environment. And so what I see here is Worf is viewing Klingon culture because of his childhood through the eyes of an outsider, and he has this very, it's like you read a book about a country and you've never actually been to that country, and you might be book smart about the culture, you might be book smart about the people who live there, but unless you actually live there, you really don't know what it's like. You know, I mean, I know this firsthand. I've lived most of my adult life in Japan, and when I talk to people outside of Japan, their view of Japan is very stereotypical. It's stuff that they've picked up from movies or TV shows or reading books or even studying Japan in university, but it's not the same as the actual culture. And that's totally what I see in Worf in his journey to try to become Klingon.
Well, and I think he sees the ideal that he has had to suppress for so long, and he's hoping it's going to be the thing that'll make him feel, I think, more complete as a person. And yet he never really finds a way to make that work, because he can't get rid of everything that he's grown up with the Rodzenkos. And they really taught him, I think, a lot about what it means to be a man and what it means to be a human. And those values that they're ingrained in Worf. And again, in the same way that Clark Kent, who was Kal-El, has those human values ingrained by his parents, and they define who he is. This happens for Worf. And as much as he wants to, you know, embrace what it means to be a Klingon, you know, we see him time and time again, you mentioned this when we were talking beforehand, rejecting what it would mean to be a Klingon in favor of a more human or Starfleet view of life. And Worf right. has clashing worldviews that are battling for his soul, really. And they don't really go together very well a lot of times, right. the Klingon values and, you know, the more Starfleet human values. And that is a tough road to walk.
It is, yeah. I think that when he does those things that contradict being a Klingon, he strives to be a Klingon, but he does those things, as you mentioned, that go against that and really contradict that. And some examples are when he finds out what Duras is doing when they're using his father, Moog, as a scapegoat and it was actually Duras's father who was the traitor at Kittimer. Worf decides to accept Disk's commendation rather than speak up about what's really going on. There's also, jumping way ahead, the way that he condemns the Klingon invasion of Cardassia, which actually tears down everything that he has spent years of repairing and building up for his brother and for his family name. And he loses all that too. But then there's the time he goes against the Starfleet mission in order to save Jadzia, which, of course, I think we both can agree that's the right thing for him to do in that situation. But I don't think it was the Klingon thing for him to do. At the same time, in all these situations that I mention, I think that in his mind, even though he's contradicting what he says it would mean to be a Klingon, he's also doing all these things because in his eyes, those are the honorable things to do. And at the end of the day for him, being Klingon is ultimately about being honorable and being true to what you see as honor in your own eyes, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely an idealized version of what it means to be a Klingon. And I think we've seen throughout, especially TNG, with all of the Klingon episodes there, and then the Deep Space Nine and all the Klingons we saw there, that a lot of times what it really means to be a Klingon is to act more Romulan. You're doing what you want to get what you want, you know? Klingons might be more boisterous, but they're honestly not all that honorable a lot of the time.
Right. And well, that's especially what we see with people like Duras.
Exactly.
What we see with
Gowron.
With Gowron. Pretty much, yeah, that's very true.
And I think that's a really... It's a really hard thing for Worf to come to grips with when he's realizing after all these encounters with his people, they're not really what he thought that they were. And I don't think it's till we get to his relationship with Martok that he's really able to come to grips with, okay, this is what it means to be a Klingon, and have somebody really tutor him in what it means to be a Klingon. And I think this is what's really interesting. You know, I've read a lot of books on this and you can't really move forward and be a man without somebody teaching you how to do that. Being a real man is something that is taught. And I think that we have a, obviously this is where it's going to get really personal for our world now, is we have a pandemic of people growing up to be just kind of man boys because nobody's been around to show them and guide them on what it means to be a man. You know, finally, this happens for Worf, too. Nobody's shown him what it means to be a Klingon and what it means to be a Klingon man. And Martok comes around and finally kind of tutors him on what it means to be a Klingon and what it means to be a good Klingon and what it means to be a good Klingon man. Because I think if anything could be said about Martok, he is the Klingon of Klingons. He is the most honorable and down-to-earth Klingon that there is. And mainly it's because he's someone who just wants to do his duty to the best of his ability and bring honor and glory to his people and to his family without doing it dishonorably. And he does that throughout all the times that we see him.
Yeah.
And because he doesn't search for his own glory. And all of that together, I think it is really interesting progression of watching Worf. And, you know, I love doing these character analysis because the more you look at these characters, you really see, I think, what these writers were trying to do with these characters if you just dig a little bit below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree on Martok. I think that if I had to sum up Worf's entire journey from TNG all the way through DS9, it is that he is searching for what it means to be a real Klingon and a real man. And I don't know that he ever truly gets there on screen by the end, but it is when Martok comes along that really starts to evolve and he starts to become comfortable, I believe, as a Klingon, as part, as a member of the House of Martok. And Martok is that, like you say, Klingon father figure to him that he never had. You know, Sergei was wonderful to raise him, but he could never be that Klingon father figure that, that Worf was seeking. You know, the other thing besides Martok is actually Jadzia, and it's actually Curzon through Jadzia. You know, Jadzia, there are two angles there. There's, of course, the romantic relationship that Worf had with Jadzia and the marriage. But the reason that Jadzia and Worf connected so well is because of Curzon's experiences with Klingons. And I think that by channeling Curzon's experience, along with Martok, Jadzia was able to help Worf come to terms with what it means to be a real Klingon and to be comfortable and to learn how to balance the Klingon side of himself with the human side of himself.
Well, and the neat thing there too is that she knows how to talk to Worf in a way that he understands. And she's also able to challenge him, I think, to show the inconsistencies of Klingon behavior without offending him and turning him off from not listening to what she's saying. And a lot of times, too, that she does this in just really effective ways when they're training with one another or they're having an argument or anything. She's just able to do it really well. And it's because of her understanding through Curzon of what it means to be a Klingon. And I think for Curzon to see the good side and the bad side of Klingons. And, you know, you can tell that Curzon loves Klingons, but you can also tell that he's not just so swept up in what it means to be a Klingon that he can't see the deficiencies in what that means as well.
Right. Yeah, you need someone who understands it, but is also comfortable calling you out on it. That's exactly what Jadzia did. And that's even what Martok would do to Worf, too. I mean, if Worf's being this idealistic, by-the-book Klingon that he read about, you know, as he was growing up, Martok can say to him, well, look, you know, that's not exactly what we do here.
Right.
And that was an important influence. While we're talking about the struggle between being Klingon and being Starfleet, there are a few instances where Worf, no matter how hard he tries to be that good Starfleet officer, his Klingon nature or his dedication to Klingon traditions gets the best of him. And these are the few times where we actually see him being reprimanded on his Starfleet record. And the first time that happened was on The Next Generation when he killed Duras after Duras had Kalar killed. And this happened in an honor duel. So it was, again, you know, one of those Klingon rituals or traditions. But of course, a Starfleet officer murdering someone is not acceptable. And Picard has to call him out on that. And that's one blemish. And then we see a similar case on Deep Space Nine when Kern comes onto the station and Kern wants Worf to kill him. And Worf carries out the ceremony. And then he's a Starfleet officer, though. So Sisko sees that and Odo sees that as murder. And Sisko especially has a very strong reaction to that. And these are times where I think Worf does a pretty good job overall of balancing Starfleet and Klingon, but there are those cases where it does get the better of him.
Well, and it's interesting to me, you know, the Federation and its love of tolerance only tolerates things so far. Which I think is funny, because it's pretty hypocritical.
Right.
And
well, it is, yeah.
But it's interesting because it really goes to make this point, I think, that there are some things that humans will maybe always consider just not right. And they're willing to then impose that morality on others and say, this should be not right for you too, which is a very, very interesting subject. But, you know, when it comes back to Worf, I think Worf feels that tension of wanting to do what's right Starfleet-wise, but also wanting to do what he feels in his heart as a Klingon. Because, you know, for Worf, being a Klingon isn't just about being, you know, somebody who's strong or anything like that, but it has very much to do with that spiritual side of life for him as well.
Right.
I mean, he is a firm believer in Klingon spirituality and all that that means. And so
he's a firm believer in candles too.
Exactly. He single-handedly helps run the candle business on Deep Space Nine, as well as the candle shops that they have to stop at frequently on the Enterprise D, because he doesn't like replicated candles.
That's right.
Yeah,
and he needs them for his bonding ceremonies.
Exactly. Those Yankee Candle stores and those outlier posts, Starfleet love Worf. He has a membership.
He has a point card.
Exactly. He has the best points card. It's so full. It's great. But I just think that that's something that's just really interesting about him. It really is. I think that's why he can say no to Starfleet's rules and regulations when something like this happens, because for him, who he is, a Klingon in his faith and in Klingon belief system, trumps that. As a person of faith like Kira on the show, or those kind of people on Deep Space Nine, their faith comes to a point where they have to say no to certain things that Starfleet might agree with and say yes to things that their faith leads them towards. And this is where Deep Space Nine really helped bring out all of that in Worf and do it in a way that really made sense, because contextually with Deep Space Nine, we're already talking about all of these subjects. Whereas on The Next Generation, they just kind of get swept under the rug.
Right. Yeah. And you talk about the faith, and it's a good point that I think is pretty much overlooked on The Next Generation, with the exception of, you know, we get to see him, as I was mentioning, the ceremony in the bonding, which he performs with Jeremy Astor. You know, we get to see there are these kind of spiritual elements to Klingon culture that he adheres to, although we don't really know what it is, and it doesn't ever come back after that. We don't even know what happened to Jeremy.
Right. I mean, it's just another child that he abandons, so.
Right. Yeah, well, that's for another show. But we did, in Rightful Heir on The Next Generation, is where who turned out to be the clone of Kalis comes back. And you know, Worf speaks how Worf definitely idolizes Kalis to the point of Kalis being a god to him, I believe. Even more so than the average Klingon, who of course sees Kalis as this great mythological figure to them, this warrior. But to Worf, it seems to be something even more. I think it's because he, as an outsider, is aspiring to be Klingon, and so he latches on to that story of Kalis. But although we do see Kalis appear on The Next Generation, again, turns out to be a clone, when we later see it on Deep Space Nine, when they go to recover the sword of Kalis, that's at the point where you can really, really feel the spiritual nature, like the devotion to this belief that Worf has, to the point of it going overboard for him. And it just becomes, it like colors his view of things to the point where I think Jadzia really has to snap him out of it.
And that's where I think she is so good for him. She gives him that that sounding board and that buttress that he needs to keep him from going over the deep end. And the way that she can reach him that other people can't, because she understands the psychology and just she has a deep understanding of what it means to be a Klingon and Klingon beliefs. She can reach him and kind of grab him and snap him out of that. And I think that's just such a beauty of, one, the fact that Dorne and Farrell have such chemistry as characters that they were able to then really put them together And it works well, obviously, because, you know,
yeah.
Jen Zia already had Curzon as a part of her, and Worf comes over. You know, none of that's planned, but it's just some beautiful felicity that it works so well. And again, they're my favorite couple when it comes to Star Trek relationships. Theirs is just so organic and so beautiful. Yeah. There's nothing forced about it. Everything just kind of flows naturally. They're a good picture of a beginning couple. You know, we always talk about Miles and Keiko having that kind of picture of what it means to be married for a very long time. But I kind of feel like Jen Zia and Worf, if they've gotten the chance, they would have turned into a Miles and Keiko. They're going to have fights, and their fights are going to be very passionate. Their makeup will be even more passionate because they just end up in the infirmary with the Dr. Bashir, yes, fixing broken ribs and arms and whatnot. But you can see that they really have set up, because of their mutual respect and their willingness to want to work through things, they complement each other well. You know, where one is deficient, yeah, the other is strong, you know. And so it's just, again, it's a really beautiful thing.
They're that case, too, where, you know, I feel like in life, you know, two people will kind of are destined to meet. They kind of, they cross paths and there's some kind of connection, some kind of bond, and you don't really, it's really hard to explain, but it's just there. And Worf and Jadzia Zia are that. The scene in The Way of the Warrior when they meet each other for the very first time. You talked about it here on The Orb in the past, and I was watching The Way of the Warrior the other day, and I was really watching their faces and that interaction, and it's just completely there. It's like from the very moment that they meet, I think both directions, you could tell that chemistry was there.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after having all the weirdness of the Worf Troy thing at the end of The Next Generation, and
let us not, of course, like Voldemort, we shall not speak of it again.
Of course, Worf and Kalar as well, but when he meets Jadzia, then you know that there's something special there, and that's going to change him.
Well, anytime Susie Plaxton is playing someone, she's fantastic. I mean, we could talk about Solar for a long, long time, but
you know, I think Solar for a lot of people is like my Leffler, because I see so many people who tweet about Solar. Who's your favorite Vulcan? Solar. Besides Spock, it's Solar. It's just Solar.
Yeah, she. Well, anyway, I'm gonna stop. On that scene too, you know, you also get,
you don't want to become a sound clip on one of Colin's shows.
No,
right?
I do not. I also really enjoy that first episode as well, where they meet, because there's the whole thing where her and Worf are talking, and Worf is recognized that, you know, she has Curzon in her, and but he's distracted.
Yeah, he says, you used to be Curzon Dax, right?
Right. But he's distracted by Drex. When Worf manages to stop him and take his dagger, you know, Dax gives that face and just that perfect line of, oh, he's good. And yeah, you just know that there's something there. And it is when you rewatch the series, you know what's going to be coming for them. And you just watch with giddy anticipation. It's one of the real joys of I think, of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it is. Well, speaking of her influence, and we talked about Martok's influence a bit, and I brought up the Sword of Kaelas, and I did find that episode interesting as another turning point for Worf, because Kor in that episode represents to Worf, I believe, what Worf thinks all Klingons should be like. You know, Kor is this legend amongst the Klingons. But Kor succumbs to the same influence of the sword and the legend that Worf does, to the point where, thank goodness, Jadzia was there, because if only Kor and Worf had been there, they probably would have killed one another over the Sword of Kaelas, because they both became very drunk on the history of the sword and the power of the sword. I mean, it was almost like the ring for them, right?
Right.
It's like one bat left to rule them all. And so instead of throwing it into Mount Doom, they just beam it out into space, which was a little bit less dramatic, but pretty much served the same purpose.
It doesn't sit on any lava for a while, you know, and it's disappointing.
Yeah. But as time goes on, you know, Worf does start to loosen up. Another topic as he comes onto Deep Space Nine that I did want to talk about was his transition to the command track. Because if we want to talk about relationships with other characters, we've talked about Martok, we've talked about Jadzia. I think O'Brien was very important to Worf's acclimation to life aboard Deep Space Nine, as well as just helping Worf learn to lighten up a little bit and maybe to understand other people a bit better. And an important case was in the episode Starship Down, where, you know, Sisko is injured, Worf finds himself in command of the Defiant, and the way he handles that command really highlights his inexperience at leadership and his very rigid nature and inability to actually be a leader to other people, even though that's, I think, what he... I don't know. Sometimes I feel like maybe Worf does feel like he has a superiority complex. I think he believes he's more honorable. He's more ethical, I don't know, more better than a lot of people, especially junior officers. And you see that when he's on the Defiant, and O'Brien really pulls him aside. It's like, look, Worf, you know, this is how you have to deal with people. And I think Worf went through a very important transition in that episode, just thanks to that relationship with O'Brien and having someone that he's comfortable with, that he respects, you know, that he served with on the Enterprise, that could pull him aside.
Well, I think Worf has that Klingon mentality of the family that he comes from. You know, Moog was a very important family, and he kind of brings that through to his Starfleet life. You know, he's a officer, and so he kind of looks down on others in the way that a Klingon with royal blood in his line would look down on just a peasant Klingon, you know, in the way that if Worf didn't know Martok, he might look down on Martok because he comes from the Kethel Lowlands. And I think he brings that through, and O'Brien is really the one who is able to, I think, gently and then kind of a little more forcefully remind Worf what his job as a commander is supposed to be. You know, it's not just to give orders, but it's to help inspire, and it's to help bring out the best in people so they can do their best work. And O'Brien really helps show him what that looks like, you know, because O'Brien has been around the block quite a few times and worked with many commanding officers in his time, for all the ships that he's been on, all the posts that he's been a part of. And he's always been one of the lower ranking officers. He's been a chief of operations. You know, he's an enlisted man, so he'll never be high up on the rank food chain. But he knows what it's like to have somebody bring out the best in him. You know, he's worked for Picard, he's worked for Sisko, he's worked for all these guys, and he's really taken that to heart, and he's able to share that then with Worf. And I think it's really cool because, too, this is something that I wanted to mention as well, Chris. You know, Worf has been under Picard, and then he's now under Sisko on Deep Space Nine. Worf says that Sisko intimidates him. And we know this because Ezri tells that to Sisko, which amuses Sisko to no end. But we never get the feeling, or he never says that he's intimidated by Picard. What do you make of this?
Well, I think Sisko is a much more emotional person than Picard is. And I think, again, when Kern came on the station and he asked Worf to kill him, and Sisko's reaction to Worf after that happened, and his reaction to Jadzia as well, which I found interesting too, that, you know, Sisko's like, both of you out of here now. And he groups Worf and Jadzia together, which I thought was quite telling, that that Jadzia and Worf, I mean, they're so similar. And I think, and because Sisko knew Curzon too, I think he kind of used Jadzia as a Klingon a little bit. Anyway, just not that Curzon was a Klingon, but you know, the relationship, you know, and it's so.
Yeah.
I think in Sisko's mind, he sees Jadzia that way. He definitely sees similarity. But I think that, you know, Worf knew that Sisko, if Sisko were upset, he would lash out at you. You would know it. Whereas Picard would be calm but stern. And Picard may punish you, but it's like a parent, you know, punishing you, setting down the rules, and look, you really disappointed me, and here's what's going to happen. Now, go back to your quarters. Whereas Sisko was much more emotional about it. But I don't know. I don't think that Worf was not intimidated by Picard. I actually think Worf was intimidated by Picard, but not in the same way, not in the visual way. I think that in some ways, because of Worf's desire to adhere to this respect, this chain of command, I mean, this, you know, respect for elders a bit, and experience and honor, that he saw Picard as someone who was way up above him in the command structure. And so it was maybe like a quiet intimidation, whereas the relationship with Sisko is much more organic and much more kind of on par, especially as Worf became commander of the Defiant, where, and he was on the command track there as well. So I don't know, that's just how I see that.
I think when I look at the Worf Sisko dynamic, I think what Worf responds to with Sisko is his strength. Sisko is just somebody who kind of emanates strength in a very visceral way. You know he's not somebody that you want to piss off.
Right, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
of his just. I think you might just call it his Sisko-ness. and Picard is much more demure, one might say. He's not going to come at you like that, but he's also very difficult to get angry. In fact, really the only time I can think of Picard being like more like Sisko is in First Contact.
That's the only time truly like Sisko.
In that moment. Otherwise, Picard is just a very tame person. He's able to control that anger he might feel like that. But I think the other thing that really helps Worf be intimidated by Sisko, though, is that I think he sees what he would like to be as a commander. I think he would like to be like Sisko. And I think of all the captains that Worf has served with, I think that... he is most likely to end up being more like Sisko than Picard, because he's also going to be much more of a man of action. And Sisko has always proved to be a man of action.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about Sisko, for sure. And the difference between Picard and Sisko. The other time where I can think of where Picard did something that was Sisko-esque is an insurrection where he resigns his commission because he doesn't agree with what Starfleet is doing with the Baku, but he does it in that very quiet way. He does it in a very Picard way. It's not how Sisko would have handled that. And so, yeah, I get this connection that Worf has to Sisko, how he looks up to him, how he sees him as the kind of commander he would want to be, and also why he would be intimidated by him as well. Okay, there are so many things to talk about where Worf's concerned. We're getting pretty close to an hour, and there was one other very important topic that I wanted to get your thoughts on. So let's do that one before we wrap up. And that's the spoiler alert for everyone who hasn't I hope you're not listening to the show if you haven't gotten to the end of Deep Space Nine, but it's the death of Jadzia. You know, they had just gotten married. They had decided to try to have children, and Jadzia dies. And how do you feel that? And we talked already about how important Jadzia was to Worf's development, finding himself, coming to terms with who he was as a Klingon and a Starfleet officer. How did Jadzia's death affect Worf and change him?
Oh, goodness. I think for Worf, I think there's a little bit of a breaking of Worf. You know, Jadzia meant so much for him and kind of opening him up to new experiences and really helping him find, I think, who he wanted to be and who he was going to be. And especially with, I think, the hope for him to be a family man and to maybe do it right in the way that he hadn't been able to do with Alexander, because he just was so clueless on how to. And, you know, Kalar had died, and you know, you notice everybody around Worf dies. I mean, Kalar, his brother is effectively dead, his parents. I mean,
well, I think that kind of goes, to some extent, goes with the territory of being a Klingon. But yeah, it seems to impact Worf maybe more, certainly more than we see with any of our other characters.
And spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read the books, but his new paramour dies as well. So this happens a lot to Worf, and I don't know how much more he can take as a character, really. But
this is why Michael Dorn wants to do a sitcom, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
need to lighten things up a little bit.
I don't think it's going to be as good as The Rikers in Space, or Cooking with the Captains with Shatner and Stewart. But those are different shows.
And
anyway.
Sisko, don't forget Sisko. Got to get that gumbo in there.
Well, that's true. That would be great too. Yeah. He'd just be like the crazy uncle who comes over all the time.
he plays piano while exactly. While Picard and Kirk cook. He's over the corner.
Be awesome. Anyway, you know, when you look at what Worf goes through after her death, and then he has the huge struggle of, you know, his wife is dead, but a part of her is alive then in Ezri. And
that's the twist. I mean, that's the real science fiction twist.
You know, people hate that Ezri exists in the show, but I think she really does a lot for the good science fiction storytelling of the struggle of the death of Worf's wife. And we know, too, that Trills really take on the personalities of the their, you know, most recent hosts. So for her, it would be Jadzia, and then Curzon, and then, you know, slightly less of all the others because they're so close. And so that means that a lot of Jadzia is going to show up in Ezri as she kind of gets more comfortable in her own skin. And so talk about just kind of being mind screwed as Worf. You know, your wife is dead, but she's not really dead, but she's dead. And it's a really difficult thing. And so, honestly, I think it changes him in a way that makes him just kind of have a wound now that he walks around with that I don't know, at least for the show, they never really completely close.
Yeah, they didn't really have an opportunity since it happened at the end of season 6.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so it was sad that she died on the show, but it did give us some more character development for Worf and to just watch him deal with one more thing. And you know, as a storyteller, you definitely, those kind of things happen. You want to make the best of it. And they were able to give us some great storylines with Worf afterwards and watching somebody deal with death. You know, you started off Deep Space Nine with death, with the death of Jennifer. I think it's interesting that we kind of end Deep Space Nine with the death of Jadzia and watch somebody else go through the same thing. And they didn't really play this too much, but I would have liked to have seen them do a little bit more with Sisko and Worf bonding because of that. You know, the death of a wife. I really think that would have been a good story point for the last season, but they were trying to do a lot in that last season.
Well, there was so much going on. Maybe if Jadzia had died at the end of the fifth season.
Right, exactly.
Then during the sixth season, before we got to, you know, the culmination of the war,
yeah,
there would have been more opportunity for something like that. So, all right. Well, let's wrap up our discussion of Worf for today. To do that, do you have any final thoughts on Worf? Anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't touch on?
I don't think anything to mention that we didn't really get to. I think we hit a lot of the main points with Worf. I do think that, again, it shows that when you give a character the right place to be, they're really able to breathe. And Deep Space Nine just seemed to be a place where that could happen. And I'm very thankful. Like you said, Worf was not obviously planned to be on Deep Space Nine. They brought him over. We know in the beginning, yes, this is a rating stunt, but it's something that turned out so well. And I don't think anybody would argue that it didn't. You know, with Voyager, you still get people arguing about whether or not Seven of Nine was good for the show. I don't really think anybody argues whether or not Worf was good for Deep Space Nine, and Deep Space Nine was good for Worf. It was just a mutually beneficial relationship there. And so very thankful that this happened and that he got to be somebody that we would talk about then on the Orb.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said earlier on, I was against Worf coming to DS9 originally, but I'm very glad he did because it enriched the character of Worf so much, and it also enriched all the people around him as well and brought us stories that we wouldn't have otherwise had, and all the Klingon stuff that played out, and you know, great characters like Martok would have never been on Deep Space Nine, most likely, if Worf had not come over, because of the way the story was crafted to make sense for why Worf would come over in the first place. And so I'm very glad that he did come. You know, we didn't talk much about him as a father. I think that's something we might touch on another show, because there's a lot of stuff there, even stuff I noticed recently watching and with interactions with Alexander. And, you know, for me, just summing up Worf, I think that I see him time and again trying to find his identity, putting up a front to who he wants people to believe he is. And then I watch him contradict himself. And I watch him put his loved ones above duty. I watch him put the best interest of Starfleet above the best interest of the Klingon Empire, which would seem to contradict where he's headed. But again, I think that he does it all because he believes that's what's honorable. And, you know, for all his flaws, I think that Worf is one of the very good men in Star Trek.
Agreed.
Very interesting character. All right, let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Worf. And if you want to do that, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and send to the Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me. You can also join us on our forums at trek.fm/forums, and we have a section there for the Orb. We have one for Deep Space Nine, so we can talk about Worf, any part of DS9 you want to talk about. Just join us over there. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, and of course on Twitter under username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, what if people would like to look you up personally?
Well, I am on Twitter at MattRushing02, and then of course you can find me on TrekFM doing the book reviews as well as literary treks with you.
Excellent.
And Chris, where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. So give me a follow and give me a shout out. As you mentioned, Matthew, you can find me on Literary Treks with you each week, where we talk books and comics. And you can also find me elsewhere on the network each week on The Ready Room, where I'm joined sometimes by Matthew, and also by many other hosts from across all the Trek FM shows, as well as friends of the show like Larry Nemechek, Michael Fisher, many other people. And we also, Matthew, I wanted to just take a moment, because we've been a little bit remiss in doing this. I just wanted to give a shout out to all of our listeners who have left us reviews on iTunes. Because of the format of the show, we don't really have a mailbag segment. I've been thinking about how to deal with that. But we've had quite a few reviews on iTunes recently, and we'd like to give a big thank you to Avenger ZS, to Enterprise Extra, to Colonel S. Gator One, who's one of my SEC brothers. Actually, one of our SEC brothers, Matthew, as you are an Aggie and you are now an SEC.
That's right. Welcome.
Well.
We're all part of the family now.
Shows the power of Star Trek. You are a Texas A&M Aggie. I'm Alabama Crimson Tide. And Colonel S. Gator here is a Florida Gator, but yet we all come together for our love of Star Trek. And also, while we're giving shout-outs, Fleet Feet 47, King Noah, 49er Faithful, and Admiral Rex, thank you for your reviews in the U.S. store. And Matthew, we've also gotten some reviews in the U.K. store, which thankfully people have given us a heads up. If you do leave us a comment or a review or a rating in a store outside the U.S., please do give us a heads up, because we have to go look for those manually. There's no mechanism in iTunes to let us know. So we'd like to thank our friend Michael Clark in the UK, Flippy18 UK, and Danny Stambo for your reviews in the iTunes UK store. And we really appreciate everyone's support of the show, and really are thankful that you listen every week.
Yes, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. We do read your reviews. And please, if you have a chance, go on iTunes, give us a review. It does help us climb the inner workings of the strange rankings of podcasts. It just really helps other people find the show. And so if you do that for us, let us know, and we will thank you on the show as well.
Absolutely. So again, everyone, thanks for listening, and join us again next week when we once again gaze into the orb.